Hello and welcome to the Geek Stampede Comics Roundup. In lieu of theme music, there you have it. I am Joey G, and across the table is my little bro.
Hello.
What's your name, dude?
Robbie G.
Robbie G. We are solo in the kitchen yet again.
We are solo with each other.
Don't say it like that. Sans Ryan is what I meant.
Sand Ryan.
Sand him. Sand him.
That's actually his first name. His first name is Sans.
Sand his face.
Hello.
It's actually Sandheim, but we don't know how to pronounce names that are not of American or Canadian descent.
You don't want to have Canadian name in Canada? You get out. You get the fuck out.
Our Canadian brothers. the Canadish people. But
the
yes,
Canadish.
Welcome to the show. This is the show. We didn't have a show last week because Rob was too busy.
Sorry. I apologize.
I hadn't read any comics.
No show.
Yeah, dick. I never even heard what you were doing. You've never let something come in the way of the show before.
I know, that's the first time I apologize.
The first time you've ever apologized?
Yeah, the first time I've ever apologized. Well, I could explain why.
What I've made a mistake about.
So, last Thursday, I was teaching until 5 o'clock, and every single one of my students up until, typically I teach till 8, had canceled. So I was done 3 hours early. And
so this is sounding more
like,
and more like you have no excuse.
I know. That's why I was embarrassed when I finally texted you, is because I went home and I was writing and I got really into a groove, and I was writing and I was doing so much. And then 2 hours into writing, 7 o'clock comes around and I get texted from my work. And they're saying, oh, can you come back really quick and sub for 3 students at the end of the day? Eric, one of the teachers there, couldn't make it. So we need you to sub. And I went, oh yeah, I can. Oh, and then realized I was on my 4th beer and went, no, I totally can't do that. That sucks. That's embarrassing. And I didn't, cause I was in the zone, and I was just like in my own little world, and then just kept running downstairs thinking about this stupid little thing I was writing, and then grabbing another beer and then coming back up. And then you texted, what time are we podcasting? And I went, oh no, it's Thursday. I can't drive a car. That's horrible. So I'm sorry.
So,
I
don't
have
really
a good
don't
excuse.
Have a good
I really don't.
Yeah, I was too drunk.
No, I wasn't drunk at all. I'm sorry. I apologize. It's a stupid excuse. But
it's fine. I hadn't bought any comics that week yet, so I hadn't read anything. I was going to be like, well, I'll chair the show, but I haven't read anything.
Because, yeah, well, you texted me, and I went, oh, yeah, maybe I can't drive my car over to Joe's. That's not safe.
Yeah.
But I had read 25 comics last week. But last week was one of my biggest weeks ever.
Last week was not huge for me. There was a few things. I picked them up today, actually.
Enorm.
Well, anyway, this week was relative. I haven't... Was Mind Management last week?
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
That means I'm missing an issue of Mind Management.
Number 11.
That means I don't have number 11 of Mind Management.
Oh, Joey, it's so good.
Well, I'm going to fire off an email right now.
And Nowhere Men came out last week, which was really good.
I haven't been reading that.
Oh, no? I like it.
I think I stopped after issue 2.
I won't lie. I skip a lot of the text pieces in the middle of that. Like the fake interviews with the characters and stuff. I thought that was cool for the first couple issues, but now I just don't care. I get... I think it was issue 5, and by about the 3rd text piece, I noticed that it was actually just getting to be kind of a crutch for the book, and it kept interrupting the flow, because there'd be it'd be one scene between characters, and then a text piece, and then another scene, and that would only lasted 3 pages, and then a 2-page text piece from like a fake magazine, and I started getting a little bored with it. They were at least a little bit more sparse earlier on, but that was my only complaint with that book from last week. Unwritten came out last week too. It was good. I think it came out last week. I can't remember.
Move the microphone closer to you.
Sorry.
No, I'm just saying now.
There we go.
I think it's time I talk about a comic book. What do you think?
Hey, you should...
Caught up on Cap this week.
Isn't it spectacular?
I haven't read 6 or 7. And now I've read 7 and 6.
Oh, okay. I skipped to 7.
But the one that came out this week was 7, so there's no sense in talking about 6.
I think his art, Romita's art at the beginning of this, looks better than it has throughout the whole series. It looks really clean.
See, I've actually really liked how it looks throughout the whole series.
I think it's really clean at the beginning.
Well, because it's definitely a different style at the beginning when he's doing the flashback.
Yeah, I like it.
And I noticed that there's two inkers listed in the credits, so I wonder if he has a different inker in the... flashbacks to kind of differentiate it from the stuff that's currently happening.
I I'm in love with the Romita art in this book.
Yeah, because this latest stuff, it looks pretty Scott Janssen to me. But although there's also this one page of Cap talking to what's her face, Jet Black, and it looks a little bit different, like Cap's face.
The shadowing on his face.
Yeah, so I wonder if maybe that's another Inker. I don't know. Anyway, the point is, yeah, this is a really good issue. I was a little heartbroken at the end of six when the little kid gets brainwashed, and then at the end of this one when he shoots him. Ian. Oh, shoots Cap, and I'm like, oh, bummer sauce, bro.
I hope it gets resolved, but it probably won't, because Ian's not in the regular 616, so I'm assuming that, I don't know, maybe he, like, saves him and
fuck continuity.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Right in its continuous butthole.
I'm just going to say that this Captain America book takes place after the events of whatever, and then, like, one issue of Avengers, all of a sudden, he'll be back with a beard and short hair and a kid.
I just think time will pass. Beard. They should keep the beard.
They gotta keep the beard, though.
I love that it's in a completely... I love that it's just like, we're in a completely different world, so that nothing that goes on in the 616 matters. I love
all
it when books do that.
All comic books should take place in the universe.
I agree, Joey. I agree.
There should be no shared continuity, because that's boring.
Yeah, unless you work for IGN, in which case, for IGN... That's all that matters. How does this affect all the other books? This doesn't make sense. This doesn't line up.
Like, you know, I've never actually once looked at IGN.
Don't look at them for their comics reviews.
I didn't realize that they did comics until you just mentioned. I guess I always knew, but it never really occurred to me.
Their comics reviews are always really trite, and I don't know. They're just it's funny that they review comics, because they seem to fucking hate comics. Like, all their reviews are really negative. Really negative, and it's always negative for dumb reasons. Like, they don't really like Wonder Woman, because it's like, how does this fit in with the Justice League? How come they haven't talked about her relationship with Superman?
Okay, this isn't. I'm looking.
It doesn't fucking matter.
I'm looking at the comics front page of IGN, and the top three stories are: Does The Dark Knight Rises ending make legal sense? Okay, that's a movie, not a comic. Movies podcast welcomes M. Night Shyamalan, not a comic. How Iron Man 3 should have ended, not a comic. Transformers 4 reveals Bumblebee's new look, not a comic. What we saw on the set of Man of Steel, not a comic. Zack Snyder's Superman short announced. Not a comic, because it's actually a cartoon. X-Men number one review is the seventh thing down. The next one, 90s Captain America is as bad as you remember. The movie, the Cat movie from the 90s, not a comic.
They made a Cat movie from the 90s?
Close call for Marvel's Guardians cast. Glenn Close been cast in Guardians of the Galaxy, not a comic. New Man of Steel TV promo, not a comic. Fuck. I've come to the conclusion that I don't think they're making superhero movies for me, because I don't seem to like them very much.
You liked Amazing Spider-Man?
I did, but I don't seem to care. Can we rephrase that? I don't seem to care. Like, I haven't seen the last couple big ones, and I don't really know when I'm
going
to.
Well, if it makes you feel any better,
care at all.
I don't really care. Well, I haven't seen Iron Man 3 yet. I haven't seen any of the X-Men movies since the third. I think there's been three since that.
No, there's been two. There's been X-Men Origins Wolverine, and there's been X-Men First Class.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen those.
I've seen both of those.
Of the superhero movies that I've seen... I've seen all the Spider-Man movies, and I have seen Superman, the old ones, and
Superman
Batman movies.
Is still the greatest superhero movie of all time.
Yay us for agreeing on that. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Amazing Spider-Man, though. I thought that was good.
I liked it, too.
Avengers, I really liked.
But when, like, the second one comes out, will I be dying to go see it? I'm probably more excited for that, only because it's got my favorite villain in it, and they've got a really cool actor playing my favorite villain.
Yeah.
But
isn't it Paul Giamatti?
It's Paul Giamatti, and it's the Rhino. Really cool. But, yeah, like... It bums me out when I go to comics websites and all I see is movie shit. Like, fuck. Remember when you guys used to talk about comic books? You know those things that the comic book companies...
We've only talked about one comic so far.
Those two entertainment companies that just stopped. And that seems as good a time as any to talk about this piece that was in the New York Times recently, an interview with Karen Berger.
Oh, yeah?
What and it sort
say?
Of talks about her past and her future and all that. But at one point, she makes this one comment about how there's... very little experimentation or interesting titles that are going to be going on at companies like DC and Vertigo. And she makes the comment that she noted changes in DC's priorities in recent years, and quote, "I found that they're really more focused on the company-owned characters," she said. DC and its Disney-owned rival Marvel are superhero companies owned by movie studios, which is totally true. And then Dan DiDio, with his brilliant response, says, "Well, there's some truth to those feelings of a shifting landscape," which he says are industry-wide, which is horseshit. But, "There's not a challenge to be more profitable out of the gate, but there's a challenge to be more accepted out of the gate." I don't know what the fuck that means. And he said, "It would be myopic to believe that servicing a very small slice of our audience is the way to go ahead." No, but servicing the guys at Sony...
Who've been spending... Well, I don't know.
I mean, no, they've made it abundantly clear that they're not interested in creating comics. They're interested in maintaining properties to turn into cartoons and movies.
Yeah. The last Karen Berger vestige was Dial H. It's gone now.
It's gone. Yeah.
And that was the one that was all about completely brand new and unique characters.
And interesting, on the same day, I also read this thing that Brandon Graham posted about why he doesn't work for DC. He'd done like an 8-page Madame Xanadu story in like a House of Mystery Halloween annual.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that it was an interesting experience, but the editor was super heavy-handed, missed some basics. Like, I was never told that the kids I drew were meant to look like Akira, like old babies. I just drew them as kids. I got asked to do a lot of layouts. I think it was a 16 pages of layouts for an 8-page story.
What?
That kind of thing just makes me second-guess my own work. And I think I'm fairly competent as a storyteller, but I was being asked to make changes that I thought made the storytelling weaker. So basically, he ends up just saying, like, you know, I was always amazed at how much they paid and Vertigo's ability to hire good artists and yet still put out books I wouldn't take for free. So he basically says he has this policy now to, like, not work for DC.
It's a bummer. I'm excited about current Vertigo projects, but it's true, like, there's no emphasis on any of them anymore. They were all done. They're all dead except for Fables. Fables is still brilliant. There's a new book, a new series coming out each month for the next 4 months, but let me see. Oh, I'm actually excited for all of them. There's Hunter Bullets. There's Trillium and Collider.
On Collider, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and all those, I did actually order Trillium, but the rest I'll wait for trade.
I can't wait for Collider. I'm so.
Trillium was a mini series. Like a brand new series.
Yeah, Trillium looks fantastic.
But yeah, I just think it's kind of a bummer. And if you look at my pull list, anyway, it's sort of underrepresented from Marvel and DC. Although, the first two books I talked about were Marvel, and the only DC books I'm really still... I'm getting Wonder Woman, and I'm getting All-Star...
Wonder Woman's great.
And I was getting Dial H. I'm thinking of dropping Batman because I just don't think I care, even though it's fairly good. It's just not something I am interested in reading.
Nervous. See, I still really, really have an affection for all those super books. But
I love superheroes, but I just don't know that I like what they're doing with them lately. So
fair enough.
Yeah, that's fine.
Fair enough.
We'll be right back after this message from our sponsors. That's actually exactly what has to happen. And we're back. Would you talk about a comic book, please?
Because we just finished bitching out DC and Marvel so much.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Justice League of America.
Do it.
So
this was a controversial issue.
Yeah, this was a controversial
one. Or rather, it has a cliffhanger. I don't know how controversial it is. I don't know anybody who reads this book, so I don't know if anyone cares.
I haven't read anyone talking about it. I don't think people really care about this book as much as they had anticipated people caring about this book. And already, as a testament to the fact that they just have, like, they can't seem to get their shit together over in those offices, they're 4 issues in, and already they have a fill-in artist. David Finch could handle 3 issues. Now, issue 4 is Brett Booth, who, by the way, I don't like his style. It's way too 90s. It's way too Cyberforce. I don't dig it. And then issue 5 is going to be David Finch again, and then after that it's going to be Doug Monkey and his army of inkers. So, yeah.
The Secret Society of Super Inkers?
Yeah. And I love Doug Monkey, but like his art in recent Green Lantern stuff has been all over the place because he's inked by bad people who are... Well, by people who don't compliment his pencils at all, that end up making all of his pencils look really blocky and smudged. So I know that that's going to happen during this Trinity War thing, but ultimately in JLA 4, there is a big cliffhanger at the end that will immediately get resolved because I'm going to spoil it. I'm doing it. Yeah, Catwoman gets shot in the head and dies apparently.
I've seen the panel. She's fucking dead. She got brains splattered everywhere.
But
in the book, in her own book, they've been hinting for a long time that someone stole her identity. So. That means that Catwoman isn't dead, and the woman who was pretending to be Catwoman in that book
is dead.
Wasn't Catwoman, which would explain why their characterization is totally different. Although I would explain that by saying that Geoff Johns just doesn't read any of the DC comic books, which is why his Wonder Woman doesn't even resemble Brian Azzarello's Wonder Woman. I don't think Geoff Johns reads comics anymore. I think he just writes his own and counts money.
And plays Halo. Eats cereal. You know, watches cartoons. Cartoons are sweet, though. Ultimately, it's not a very good comic book. It's not a very good series. It's kind of a disaster. I don't know what it is about me, because I still read so many books that at the end of them, like, I enjoy reading them, and I get to the end of it, and I go, Yeah, that was a lot of fun to read. And then I think I'm like, it really wasn't that good though. Like, I think I've talked about this a million times before. Do you ever like read or watch or listen to stuff like that where you're like, I'm still just enjoying it, even though it's not very good? Like,
not me anymore, because a long time ago I realized I don't have all that much spare time really. Yeah. So if I don't really like something, I just stop.
I don't know. Like, I still watch How I Met Your Mother, and I would say that it's not a particularly good sitcom.
That's why I don't watch
But it makes me laugh. I don't know. So I guess it's that. Like, it takes me...
Not even because it's not good. It's just that if I didn't really like it, I don't want to spend... I have this, like, crippling anxiety about dying. So I don't want to, like, think, this is all time I could have spent not doing this. Because I'm going to be dead soon.
I think it's more I like it, but I wouldn't wish it upon anybody else. I like Justice League of America, but I wouldn't suggest anyone else read it unless you really love it when Hawkman talks occasionally, or you just...
If Hawkman would talk in a Hawkman book, but I don't. I have no confidence that they would put out a Hawkman book I'd want to read.
It is worth it picking it up every month because the Marvin the Manhunter stories.
Excuse me, Superman.
By Matt Kent.
That was by Marvin the Martian.
That was very good.
it wasn't that good.
I know. I was being polite. Because you welcome me into your home. I figure I should be nice to you in your shitty impressions. Don't look sad.
Hey-o.
The Matt Kent storylines, the Martian Manhunter stuff.
Matt Kent is doing
awesome comics. It's good stuff. Worth it just for those 8 pages. It's pretty sweet. I like that. I wonder... you know what? I don't care.
Cool. Hey, did you see DC's 75th anniversary logo they're going to be using for a while? I have it up on my screen if you'd like to
Superman
see
thing?
It. Yes. Now, I think it's really awesome that they're going to do the Superman 75th anniversary logo. I'm a little bummed out that the Superman comic books are having their logo with the movie Superman. Like, that's not
the
classic
S.
That's not the classic S.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, and I get it. DC's all about being out cool and hip and new, but, like, if you're celebrating the 75th anniversary of your character, at least have him with, like, the logo that has come to represent Superman over 75 years.
Or at least if you're celebrating 75 years of Superman, you should acknowledge that you're not cool and hip.
Yeah, or maybe if you're going to celebrate 75 years of Superman, maybe show 75 years worth of evolution of the logo, like... Mm-hmm.
That'd be cool.
I don't know.
Or, I don't know.
Throughout the year, each month or something, do a different logo. Yeah. Like, the first one can be the really boring ass from Action Comics.
Or you could get someone who isn't Scott Lobdell to write your comics. And then when you get Andy Diggle, don't scare him the fuck away so that he only writes one issue and goes, fuck you, clowns, I'm out of here.
I'm going to go write comics somewhere else, pitches for movies.
every week, our podcast gets a little bit more bitter at DC.
It's going to eventually get to the point where even you are going to run out of optimism and just drop all DC books.
It may happen. It's
my sadness will rub off on you, and then we'll go be sad bastards together.
Ew, why are you rubbing off so sad?
Don't say it like that. Jesus.
That was a good joke.
I guess.
What comic did you read, Joe?
Well, I'm going to get this one out of the way so I don't have to talk about it anymore. Well, actually, I have 2 more. Never mind. I'll do this one first because now that I've been being so negative about superhero comics, I'm going to be really positive.
Good.
Or mostly positive. This week saw the release of Adventures of Superman number 1 from DC Comics with 3 separate creative teams. It's just an anthology book. This story, the comics originally appear online as one of them digital books, and now they're getting around to publishing them in print. So our first story is called Violent Minds, Jeff Parker and Chris Somni. I love the art. The story was fine.
Yeah.
Somni is... It was a little grim, but I still really enjoyed it.
Somni is an artist that I wish drew Superman a lot more. Oh, I'm actually glad you brought this up because I have been being really down about DC, and this book just totally...
But,
and, you know, did you notice that...
What he's wearing.
Exactly. I was about to say, did you notice that in every story, Superman is dressed old school.
He's real Superman, not shitty...
Not I have armor
Superman. He's got his classic uniform, and he's being Superman with a square-jawed hero who is just awesome.
Perfectly coiffed hair. Yeah, it's great.
It's great. I liked it a lot.
I
like
that story.
Now, the next story, I love...
Me too. This was one of my favorite Jeff Lemire stories ever.
The two kids playing superheroes.
This was Essex County with Superman in it.
Yeah, and it's just two kids playing superheroes, and we get to see a whole bunch of Superman's rogues. So Superman versus the Super Robot Squad, and Brainiac is in it, and Bizarro is in it, and Luther and
Mrs. Bitlick.
General Mr. Mrs. Bitlick. Or Mixelplick, as they say on the cartoons.
Mixelplick.
It
was
Luther.
So...
Yeah, it was great.
It was just really, really adorable. And brought a tear to your eye, because we were just like, oh, that's like... That's one of the most beautiful messages ever. It's just two little kids hanging out and having crazy imaginations.
So at least somebody at DC remembers what's great about Superman.
Yeah. And it's one of their big writers.
And it said he's lame and dopey, sitting on a barn smiling as little kids talk about him, which is a little creepy. We're gonna move
past
he's
that. Not masturbating.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's just like,
he's
oh,
just
look
listening
at me,
to them.
Being a happy guy.
What the fuck is he just sitting there listening? There's probably someone drowning somewhere. What is he just hanging out doing that?
But you can do both.
No, he can't.
Yes, he can. He's Superman.
Okay, that's a good point.
Superman always
wins. I loved that. That was my favorite story of the anthology.
Me too. And then I did enjoy the last story,
the Bizarro,
which was Riley Rosmo. Did he write it as well?
No, it was Justin Jordan.
Okay, right, Justin Jordan. Superman versus Bizarro. I actually thought it was a really fun story.
It was very fun.
Oh, I hate this
huge blast.
Fucking Superman Unchained splash pages in all the books I'm reading now. I'm like, God, I hate 2-page ads.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like,
we've had that great before, yeah.
Yeah, but. And then Superman saves a little kid. And
Rosmo is an artist who I never would have pegged
or
picked. Yeah, exactly, as a Superman story.
Yeah,
and he's great.
Turned out good.
The way that he draws Superman,
his
Bizarro is spectacular. Yeah. I like the way that he draws Supes.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's really...
It's a little bit cleaner line than he usually does.
Yeah, it shows his versatility.
Yeah.
Because when I heard that he was doing a Superman story, I was like, oh,
that's going to be weird.
Would be weird. But the way he draws Superman and Clark is
really
good.
And it was a fun little ending, and I quite enjoyed it.
It was very by the numbers. Oh, Bizarro, everything you say is opposite.
Yeah, but you know, those are good stories.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're fun.
I really enjoyed this anthology. I'm excited for the next
few. What did
you
think of the cover?
The Brian Hitch cover?
I thought it was okay.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Oh,
look, he's breaking chains. Why do they want Superman to be unchained so badly? Like, you have to keep these
chains.
Was he chained?
I don't know,
but DC's really trying hard to make sure we all know that if he was chained, that is no longer the case. He is decidedly unchained now.
He's like a Nelly music video,
yeah.
I swear to God.
Let's bring up
more musicians from a decade ago that no one remembers.
I made a Nelly reference a while ago, and I thought that I was being hip because I was talking to young people, and they just stared at me.
And then
I realized that it had been about 10 years.
I was teaching a song the other day by a band called Florida Georgia Line, and it's called... what the fuck is it called? Cruise. And it sounds like two bros who just had four Coors Lights between the both of them they were sharing through a straw. And they were driving their Chevy and just driving up to women on the beach asking for blowjobs. And that's what that song sounds like, exactly to me. But the best part is I was teaching it to one of my students, and I was like, this is probably the lamest song I've ever heard in my entire life. The lyrics make me want to kill myself. And then and then one of my other students asked for it next, because apparently it's super, super popular. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I typed it into YouTube and then noticed that not only is there the original version, but... guess who remixed it and made it an even better version? Motherfucking Nelly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's
still around.
That's what I said.
He was dead.
I went, do you know who this is? To my 13-year-old student, who of course went, no. And I went, oh, he used to suck a lot 10 years ago. Now he sucks now again too.
Yeah, I guess he's still sucking. Good for him for staying current. Like, he's sucked in multiple decades.
It's so perfect. It's the exact same song. It's just him going, oh,
yeah.
And
everyone goes, remember? And everyone goes, no.
Baby, you a song. Oh, you make me want to roll my window down. Yeah. It's just making me
laugh.
Remember Nelly?
No.
Oh, okay.
You remember he had those? He had like a double album called Sweat, and the other one was called Suit.
It's getting hot in here.
Take off all your clothes.
I am getting so hot. I'm going to
take my
clothes.
I'm so far out of touch that was probably Nelly's biggest hit. At that point, I had forgotten about Nelly, and I always go back to like that first song when he was like riding in the car, and that one.
Oh.
So I forget that his bigger hit, song, was the one that. Yeah.
It's getting hot
so
in here, so take off all
he's
your clothes.
So irrelevant that I only remember his first hit single.
Oh.
I don't even remember his second hit.
The song is so painful, Joey. It's so painful.
I believe you.
And then I had to teach. Who gives a shit? Let's move on.
Well, then you.
I'll talk about a book.
Yeah.
Actually, everything that I read this week was a DC or
really?
Marvel book, except for one.
That's annoying.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to come back to me bitching again.
Well, you would... No,
yeah,
this
I
was,
promise
this was,
I won't bitch anymore.
This was another really good book. And it was The Dark Knight, Batman The Dark Knight Annual by Greg Kurwitz and Simon Kudransky. Simone Kudransky. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I think it's... I don't have the book in front of me, so I can't even read it. And even if I did, I can't even read. So, it was a really cool villain issue. Basically, the Penguin and the Mad Hatter and Scarecrow all get duped to go to Arkham Asylum on Halloween. They all get letters from each other telling them to meet each other at the asylum. They have a great plan to take down Batman. And then it's the three of them. It was almost like a Three Stooges episode. Like, it was so awesome.
You'll have to let me that.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. It was funny, and it was creepy as hell in bits because the art was... His art style is really dark and mysterious and really shadow intense, and, like, all the character designs look twisted and demented. The way that he draws Scarecrow is actually creepy as hell. The way he draws Mad Hatter, even creepier. But it's super funny because it's them being terrified that Batman's going to come and beat the piss out of them because they don't know what's going on. They get scared by shadows and they're getting scared by trees outside that are banging up windows. It's actually a really funny comic. And then they eventually just go, to hell with this, he's going to kill us, and they leave. And then I won't spoil the ending. The ending's quite funny. It was great. And I've been following Greg Kurwitz since he's been writing Dark Knight, and he's really good. And his Batman is fantastic because nothing that's going on matters. Nothing in the New 52 matters. They brought up Damian's death once, peripherally, because I guarantee he got people going,
well,
hey, you have
forget,
to... I know.
Damian's death doesn't matter in the New 52 either.
Like, yeah.
That's happening in another Bat book that is just like, I was here first. I'm not going to worry about your continuity. I was writing this before you guys decided to reboot everything.
Yeah, exactly. And, but anyway, his Dark Knight book was really, really good. It was like a, I think it was like a 42 page or something, 40 plus pages. Really excellent art, really fun premise. Batman's in none of it. It's actually just Mad Hatter, Scarecrow, and Penguin being Three Stooges in Arkham Asylum. It's fucking great.
That sounds pretty fun.
It's very good.
I'm gonna do something a little bit weird.
Oh my god. Do it.
I'm gonna talk about a webcomic.
Are you going to talk about the webcomic you made me read today?
Later.
Okay.
Don't spoil it. That's actually going to be my pick. But this is a webcomic that I've been reading for quite a few years now, I guess. I probably started reading it, almost 8 years ago now? That seems hard to believe, but I read it every day, and it's been continuing. Today had the 2,458th installment of Questionable Content by Jeff Jacques.
Yef Yox.
I don't even know how to pronounce it.
Yef
Yox.
Yef Yox.
And it's a story of just like a group of people who live in... Originally, it was a bit more like... there were lots of references to like indie music and whatnot, but that quickly doesn't happen anymore.
Do you like The Shins? Me
no,
too.
No,
next comic.
More just like Slint and things like that. And there was always like a Mogwai poster and stuff like that. No, this is stuff you would
it's
actually
my new
like.
Favorite comic.
But... that quickly just became occasionally you'd see a poster or a t-shirt. There's very little reference
cool.
to actual stuff.
I kind of like that.
It becomes this soap opera relationship comedy about all these people who are friends. Like, and one thing that keeps this comic fresh is his art improves over the years. And I actually am quite a big fan of it. And I've always liked it, but it's way better now than it was at the beginning. Like, come here and look at my screen for a second. This is the first strip. Hey, Pines, hey. Guys, I'm home. And this is today's strip.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like it's
gotten
night
exponentially
and day.
Better.
Oh, it's not, yeah. But anyway, this character here, Hanalore, is one of the funniest characters in comics. But one of the ways he keeps the comic fresh is he introduces lots of new characters and expands the cast so it never gets stale. That's what Friends did in its last season, now that I think about it.
Friends?
Yeah, because they added like Mike
and
the girl from Archer.
Oh, Paul Rudd, right.
Yeah,
Paul,
so they
Paul
did
Red,
add,
the girl from
but they did it in the last season, so it doesn't really count. But this has added new characters, and there's a new character who's been in it a lot. You can usually tell when he has a new favorite character because she's in the strip constantly. And it's great because this new character, Claire, who works with Martin, who's our hero, basically, at this the library at the college, is extremely funny. And so this new storyline involves one of the characters, Faye, and her boyfriend, Angus, possibly moving to New York. And just the other characters are kind of talking about and reacting to that at the moment. But it's... Even when it's not funny, I love reading it. Like, it's the closest thing I have to, like, a soap opera. Because I've been reading about these characters every day for so many years. And there have been stretches where I haven't been super in love with the storyline that's been happening, but I just so love, like, all these characters and want to know what happens to them. It's like your lady watching Coronation Street.
Yeah.
Like, only this is really good. I've never watched Coronation Street. I have no idea if it's good or not, but...
It's pretty good. He's a good writer. I'm not going to lie. It's quite good.
Jeff Wright Jocks is a good writer. He's a good artist. And he does... And like a lot of webcomics, he does all kinds of really cool long-form storytelling that you don't get anywhere else. And I really like it. And they're always four-panel, long-form. But yeah, it's a really good comic. And at this point, almost anybody who reads webcomics has definitely heard of questionable content. But if you haven't...
How long has he been doing it for? Did you mention that already?
Well, there's 2,458 entries. The first one... Holy. Let's see. The first one appeared in 2003, so 10 years. And I started reading it... I was only like... I think it was like 400 strips in at the time.
I gotta get on more webcomics.
I read a lot of webcomics. I've decided to start talking more about them more on the show because I'm not buying as many monthlies anymore.
I have Matthew McGuigan.
You have him in your house?
I have him in my pocket right now. Matthew,
oh, hi, Matthew.
Play me some flute. What's that? Flout? Oh, play me some flout. he recommended a comic for me, and I have the sticker of it in my car, but it's in a...
Like, it's called Rice Boy.
Rice Boy, thank you.
You're welcome. I know Matthew McGuigan is a huge Evan Dom fan.
Right.
Evan Dom, yes. Rice Boy was his first long-form comic, which is brilliant. Yeah. I have read that one. And then he has since had a second one, which takes place in the same universe, but doesn't have the same characters, so it's kind of an expansion on the mythology, and that one was called Order of Tales, and now his current one is called Vatu, which is on page 427.
Whoa.
Rice Boy was something... I think the total pages of Rice Boy... I don't remember. There was five books with a bunch of chapters in it. Rice Boy is probably about 1,000 pages, maybe? It was done over 2 years. Order of Tales is really long. Like, it went for another 2 years, but he was publishing more often, so it's much bigger. And now Vatu has been fairly large as well. I haven't read any of Vatu yet, though. But yeah, definitely his stuff is... totally worth checking out. It's very long-form fantasy storytelling.
Sounds great.
It's really good.
I need a scrap of paper so I can write.
There should be like a pad with dogs on it. Well, there's the box for it. Maybe it's in the other room.
Motherfucking dog.
How about I just text you?
Here it is.
Never mind. But yeah, no, definitely check out Rice Boy. Rice Boy is great. I have meant to go back and reread them all, and then I keep thinking, next time I see Evan Dom at a convention, I'm just going to buy all his books.
And he puts them out in hard copy?
Yeah, you can get physical copies of them from his website as well.
Rice Boy. Questionable. How do you spell question? That's not a real question.
I was going to say, are you stupid?
Are you? Okay.
Yeah, so the Order of Tales book is 792 pages, and you can get the whole book for $60.
So Rice Boy, questionable content.
Yeah, and Rice Boy is $48 Canadian, and it is a 462-page book.
That's awesome.
And that includes shipping, apparently.
So. That includes the shipping. The shitting.
Yeah. And it is worth it. Full color. Just really, really beautiful work. Like, cool. He's pretty great. But, yeah. If you want, when we're off the air, I'll show you a bunch of webcomics.
Off the air! Cool. I'll put them on this dog list.
Yeah, put them on your dog list.
I should take a picture of the other dog list that had the titles that I read this week.
I saw what you did there. That's pretty OCD, and I have OCD, so I know a thing or two about that.
Yeah, maybe I do, too.
No, you're just a loser.
Yeah, but I was going to...
666 is a nice touch. Talk about a comic book.
I read New Avengers this week.
Sorry, Nicki Minaj was leaving American Idol. I didn't know Nicki Minaj was on American Idol.
Who the fuck is Nicki
Minaj? I didn't know that American Idol still existed. Wow, I know slightly more than you. Nicki Minaj is
the
enormous bottom.
The butt lady, right. The starship or something.
Starships are meant to fly.
Is that Nicki Minaj? Okay, then I know Nicki Minaj.
I thought that song sounded a lot like a Britney Spears song.
No, what the fuck am I? I totally know who Nicki Minaj is. Yeah.
Yeah, what the fuck are you doing?
I know who that is.
All right, so you read...
I read Nicki Minaj.
Nicki Minaj. No, what did you read?
I read New Avengers using Nicki Minaj's butt as a table by Jonathan Hickman and Stephen Epting.
Jonathan Hickman and Steve Epting, for those at home who don't speak retard or whatever that was. That was politically incorrect. I'm sorry.
Politically incorrect.
But you are kind of retarded.
Incorrect, Joey. This was a spectacular issue. Are you still going to be reading this book or no?
I haven't been reading it. I read the first two or three. Oh, what issue was this?
Six.
Oh, God, I'm way... I dropped both Avengers books because... Oh.
You're breaking
my
heart.
I'm getting two other Jonathan Hickman books.
That's a good point.
I'm having a child. I can't be buying Avengers comics.
Jonathan Hickman has a kid and he writes them.
He gets paid to do that.
You get paid to go to work.
Yeah, exactly.
This issue involved the Illuminati having to make the life-changing decision of whether or not they're going to destroy a world or not. And if you've seen the front cover, you know the answer. It's pretty epic. It's very, very dark. It's really... it's got really heavy exposition. A perfect vehicle for Hickman to be writing. A really strong cast of characters, and he's got a really strong hold on all of those characters, a really strong voice through each one of them. It's really good. I love that he got rid of Captain America so quickly. Captain America was on his roster for like two issues, and he got rid of him. And so you got Beast and Reed Richards and Iron Man and Doctor Strange and Black Bolt, Black Panther. Fucking great book. Great book. Incredible artwork, too. One of my favorite series over at Marvel right now. Marvel, every single book that they seem to be putting out, or at least that I'm following, is solidly like a 4 or 5 star book each week. I love it. So that one specifically is really great because it's allowing Hickman the sci-fi vehicle that I think he deserves and that I think he's good at delivering. Like, it's still the same scope and writing style that he had doing those big FF stories that he was doing, but now just over a universal scale involving the whole Marvel cast of characters, which, you know, everything that he's doing with Avengers right now, I'm in love with. I think is great. That was New Avengers number 6, Joe. Plus Jock front covers.
Yeah,
motherfucking Jock.
He wins the belt, which in wrestling we sometimes call the strap. So it's the Jock strap.
Whoa! If Jock was a wrestler and knew that terminology. Maybe and got any awards for
all you know, he could be Kane under the mask.
He's not.
No, he's not. Glenn Jacobs is Kane under the mask. Okay. AKA Dr. Isaac Yankum, DDS. Ryan, where are you?
Dr. Isaac Yankum?
Originally, long before he was Kane, he was this like wrestling dentist back in the when it was like a Saturday morning cartoon when everyone had dumb gimmicks, and he was Dr. Isaac Yankum, DDS, Jerry the King Lawler's personal dentist.
Jesus. That's pretty good.
That isn't it? All right, let's get away from this mainstream.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something so underground.
Oh my God.
Truly underground.
You haven't even heard of it, and you've read it.
No, this is seriously underground.
No one speaks about this.
This is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Teenage Who's It's Ninja What's It's?
Adolescent Radioactive Black Belt Hamsters, which was actually a real thing.
Did you just... Oh, that was
a real thing.
I just thought you were really clever. Oh my God, whose line is it anyway? Sitting next to Drew Carey.
I'm sorry, can I say one goddamn thing? Earlier tonight, my lady wife was watching a documentary, and it was entitled Prom Night in Mississippi, and it was about how in 2008, this town in Mississippi still had segregated proms. They had separate proms.
Was it Morgan Freeman narrated?
No, he actually used the impetus for it, because he said if they would have integrated prom, he'd pay for it, because it was ridiculous that they were still having separate proms. Anyway, the point is, she was watching this interesting cultural documentary, and I had headphones on, and she kept telling me stuff about it, and finally I was like, okay, listen, Nicole, I need you to stop. You go ahead and you watch your interesting social commentary documentary about race. I have to read Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But it's okay, because I've seen the movie before. Anyway, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 22, by Kev Eastman, Bobby Curnow, and Tom Waltz. Script by Tom Waltz. Art by Mateus Santoluco. I don't recall seeing his work before in this book. This book has had a lot of different artists, but...
Wouldn't it be great if Tom Waltz was a gay man married to a guy named Walt, and then he had his name tag, Tom, and then it was also the possessive that he belonged to his husband, Walt, and it said Waltz with a heart.
W-A-L-T-Z is his name. Waltz with a Z.
Waltz is...
Waltz is actually one of the only words that the noun is the same as the verb.
Yeah.
And it's also possessive. And like things belonging to Walt.
Yeah, like Tom.
When they could dance at their wedding, a waltz. Waltz, waltz, waltz. Anyway, Raphael waltz, and waltz. Casey Jones were kind of out doing some patrolling. Casey gets captured. They go to save him. Raphael goes all berserker. And then Leonardo gets captured.
But Buffalo is also a verb and a noun.
It was great. And Splinter is a badass. Yes, Buffalo is also a nerve.
A nerve.
But there's no dance called the Buffalo.
That's true.
Do you remember the Far Side storyline about the Buffalo Girls? Like, because usually Far Side was just single panels, but they actually did at the beginning of one of the books have like a multi-page story about this curse of Madame Bovine, and it involved like this Buffalo woman. It was really funny. And all I could ever think of was Buffalo. Yeah, won't you
come out tonight? Won't you come out tonight?
Every grandma used to sing that all the time. Tonight.
Yeah.
She's crazy.
She is a weirdo.
I mean, she's on the way out.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean,
Jesus.
You know, she's physically, she's fine.
But, hi.
You know.
Ho. Hi.
Every once in a while, she says, "Do you think Carl topic. And Joey will get married?" Hot topic. They have those at malls.
Hot button dead grandma topic.
She's not dead.
Well,
just mentally.
Potentially. Jesus. Whoa.
We all love her. We love you, Grandma.
Okay.
Since you're listening to our podcast.
Oh. Yeah, she disagrees
with just talk about a comic book.
What I have to say about X-Men.
Okay. Is that what you're going to talk about next,
yeah.
X-Men?
Yeah.
Do you like it? Oh, fuck. I was hoping you'd bring your books tonight.
Sorry,
so
you asked me.
A bunch of them from you.
Oh, sorry. You asked me a question while I was drinking some water.
Right into the mic.
X-Men number uno by Brian Wudo and Olivia Olivier Coipel. First installment in an all-female cast of the X-Men. And it was so much fun. Brian Wood actually managed to make me give a shit about Jubilee. Couldn't believe
Jubilee.
It. Why? I like her in this book. I like her too.
I just like her.
No. So he sets it up with a really cool two-page... prose heavy kind of talk about evolution and stuff, and these particular twins who get separated at birth, and one of them goes off to evolve on a completely different rate with completely different under completely different circumstances, because one of the twins turns out to be this telekinetic mutant who's able to control people and personalities and their thoughts and all that cool stuff. Whereas this other character who got separated and now she's back has the ability to control machines and electronics and everything man-made and schnibbity-boo. It's very, very cool. And that ties in loosely. Well, not loosely, actually. Very. I'm assuming it's going to tie in really tight towards the end, but you've only seen them kind of run parallel so far in this issue, so it's really intriguing because you see that storyline of this guy coming to the X-Men, coming to Storm and Psylocke and Rachel Gray, going, "Oh no, we're all fucked. You have to help me right now." Even though he's an enemy of the X-Men, apparently he's an older character. I don't know, or he may not be. I'm not sure what his name was.
Who was he again? Sorry,
I can't remember his name. If I had the book in front of me, I'd be able to do it. But basically, he comes to the X-Men looking for help because he says. His sister's returned and that she is far more dangerous than he's ever been and the entire world is in jeopardy unless the X-Men help him, a former enemy. All this while Jubilee has found an abandoned infant that she has now taken under her care. So she's basically the surrogate mother for this child that without parents, and she's a mutant. So she's going to take her back to the Xavier Institute to hopefully have the same upbringing that Jubilee was... blessed enough to have and be surrounded by all these mutants and people who would be there for every step of the way and not surround her with hatred and fear and judgment and all that nonsense that nobody likes to have when they're kids. And then towards the very end, they start to intertwine because they're looking for Jubilee at the time, and then the people who go to get Jubilee is Rogue and Kitty Pryde in one of the coolest action sequences I've read in an X-Men book. It's so much fun. Rogue is carrying Kitty Pryde up above this train, and it's basically a train heist if what you needed to get from the heist was a person and a baby. And like Rogue throws Kitty Pryde into the train, she just falls through the roof and like has to fend off all these people, and then the train's crashing and Rogue is like ends up crashing that train. It's really, really exciting and really cool. And then towards the end, that guy who goes and tries to get the help of the X-Men of Storm and Rachel Gray and Psylocke, there's another X-Men in the team that I'm forgetting, I think, but anyway, he hears that, just offhand, that Jubilee's on her way back with the infant, and he's like, what, blah, 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 and then he hears what the circumstance involving the infant is, and then he like screams and freaks out and says, "Oh my God, you have to have to get that infant here right now or we're all dead. And that's kind of how it ends. And you're like, what? It's really exciting. It's so well drawn. It's like a perfect team. I'm so glad Brian Wood is a big name now and is writing cool soup books, like writing books about soup, you know? Stew.
Speaking of Brian Wood, that book 5 out of 5. Speaking of Brian Wood, I know this came out last week, but The Massive Number 12.
I good. Loved it.
I liked it. What? Like I hope it? We never see that artist ever again on that book.
Daniel Zelge? I love
it was
him.
So awful.
Oh my god, really? He's dead.
It was the sloppiest, ugliest book of the entire series.
I am not hearing what you're saying
like
right now.
Uber thick line.
Oh my god, Joey, you're breaking my heart.
Any of the characters.
You're breaking my heart right now.
I so did not like it.
Oh my god, he did Lunar Park, which is one of my favorite graphic novels. He did Northlanders with Brian Wood, and he did a bunch of that Brian Azzarello Western. What was that Brian Azzarello
Loveless.
Western? Loveless. He did a bunch of Loveless. Oh, really? Oh, I love Danny Jones.
I was just like, I can't wait for somebody better to come back. I really
Gary Brown.
It.
I like Gary Brown's style more, but I
story
totally...
Story 4, Art 1. I was
really,
really turned off.
I couldn't
see who any of the characters were.
Really? I love his art.
It was just like mud.
No, I like it. I love the way that it's really jagged and really...
jagged would be
bricky.
Fine, but
I dig
see.
It.
It's just like thick and gross.
I love his art. Love it.
Yeah.
He does the whole last, well, I think the last 3 issues of Northlanders. He did Loveless and he did, what else did he do? He did something else with Brian Wood that I think, maybe not, I can't quite remember, but I really like his style. Lunar Park was a great graphic novel from Vertigo. When Vertigo
not
still
me.
Put out original
not
things.
For Joey.
Not for Joey. Anyway, you'd like the new X-Men.
I probably
reboot.
Would.
Everyone seems... I'm really glad it's actually getting very well received. Because his last run on X-Men wasn't very well received. When he was just writing X-Men for a little bit.
I read the issues you let me. I
loved
fine.
Them. I thought they were awesome.
Them. I thought they were fine.
People didn't really like him. Because he had
no,
like...
People are stupid, though.
People are stupid. Which is weird because they all love this new X-Men. Maybe I'm stupid, too. I'm probably... Well, I'm guaranteed stupid. But.
No, you are, but that's okay.
Yeah. This was a really good X-Men issue. Also, I love the cast. Even though it's Jubilee.
I like Jubilee. Why do you hate Jubilee?
She's so stupid.
No, Jubilee is cool.
My favorite X-Men next to Beast, Kitty Pryde.
Really?
Who's your favorite X-Men, Joey?
When I was younger, it was Colossus. I always liked Colossus. Now, I don't know. I like Phantom X. I like Dr. Nemesis.
Dr. Nemesis is cool.
He's cool. I like...
Oh no!
I don't know if I really have a favorite X-Men anymore. I'd have to think about it.
Do you like the way that they've designed Beast now? What Beast looks like now?
Not as much. But yeah, I do. I don't
I
have
I
a problem
agree.
With it.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it at
I think
all.
It looks good. I think it's cool, and I like that they did it.
Yeah.
I think personally, aesthetically, my favorite Beast
I like
is...
Cat Beast.
Actually, my favorite Beast is probably, like, original Beast. Like, not skin... Not like human
not
Beast,
blue?
But...
Oh.
No, blue Beast, but like when he was blue,
Perez
furry.
Beast?
Yeah, back when he was in, like, the Avengers and stuff a lot. Yeah. But I really like Cat Beast. Because Morrison's X-Men was my favorite X-Men run.
Yeah.
But, no, I like this new, like, weird primate-looking beast.
I think it's
kind of
sweet.
like a Orkai from Lord of the
Rings.
Yeah,
he totally does. That's funny.
Oh, no, I like it. I have no problem with it at all.
I dug it. He's in X-Men very briefly. The very end, he's working at a desk, and then everything blows up. There's a lot of explosions in it. It's very good. Very
cool.
Good.
Well, all right, let me hit something else then. How about this? Okay, I picked this up. I don't even really know why, I guess. Because I didn't exactly... I was buying a lot of books, and I got carried away. And I thought, oh, well, this looks kind of... I like the cover, and I like Clive Barker as a horror novelist. And so I thought I'd give this book a shot from Boom. It's called Clive Barker's Next Testament by Mark Miller. Not Millar, Miller. And Jaime Jang, who did the art. It was pretty cool, man, and I really like the artist. Okay, this is the kind of art that I wish that I liked when they had this kind of art on the Massive.
Like, let me see.
Just this guy's style reminded me. It's just that kind of good stuff. Reminds me a little bit of Chris Burnham, but it's really good. So anyway, this
it
guy...
It looks very manga.
You think so?
With, I think so. I think this page, like his face does right here. Maybe it's just because he's sweating.
You know,
but
so
the
definitely...
colors on that one bit remind me a lot of Farts. He did
the
front. No, he's one of my favorite.
Rainbows?
One of my favorite collaborators, Brendan McCarthy.
Now that you mention it, I do Peter see Milligan. In the faces of some of these characters a little bit of a manga influence. You're right. Good eye. But yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a 12-issue series, and you know, it's full of mystery in this first issue. I don't really know what. It's not that I don't know what's happening. I know exactly what's happening. I just don't know what it means. Like, you, it's clear that like, this guy has somehow brought this like super powerful deity, multicolored god of sorts, and then he killed a bunch of people, and he's going to take over the world. It's pretty cool. And the cover's amazing. But I kind of liked it. So.
The color is amazing.
I think I'll probably keep getting it, at least for the next couple, and see how it goes. But
hey, what's the name of the?
I like Clive Barker, so
yeah,
that I'm getting. This I'm so getting. Six Gun Gorilla.
I've never read anything by Simon Spurrier.
No, I like Simon Spurrier a lot.
Suicide Risk by Mike Carey, really good book. Looking Through the Boom Solicits. Yeah, a lot of the coloring totally reminds me of Brendan McCarthy. What is the name of that Brendan McCarthy book?
The Zosser of Zilk.
Yeah, I couldn't find it.
They're releasing it as like a trade now, both issues together. It's good, from IDW Comics, Zosser of Zilk. It's a reprint of a 2008 Easter story he did, like last year, and then they just reprinted it like a year later in American Comics.
Sweet,
yeah.
I only read one other book that I have nothing to say about.
Okay, well then I'll just talk about these two. Then.
Yeah, I read Earth 2 Annual by James Robinson, and it was good. Okay, move on.
Okay, Savage Wolverine. I thought the artwork is unbelievable, and a lot of it was good. I thought that, I mean, I guess I shouldn't be too surprised that there's so much like over the top sexism in this comic. I don't know why. Maybe I was particularly sensitive to it this time I was reading it, this whole series with Shanna. But it was fun. It was a cool comic. It has kind of a non-ending, but that just means there'll be more of it, so that's kind of cool.
Like in the first two issues of the Savage Wolverine stuff. Sorry, I'm really far away. I'm just getting some water. I'll talk a little bit more discernible here in a second. I had noticed like the overt sexism within the first two issues.
You know what it is? I don't mind the sexualization. Like, I don't mind how overtly sexual they make Shanna because she's always been a TNA character. What I was annoyed by is that Shanna kicks so much ass. Shanna could fucking take anyone. And every 5 seconds, Wolverine's like, "Get behind me." And then every time something bad happens, it's because Shanna fucked it up. I'm like, why? Uh-huh. Is it for humor so Wolverine can grumble? I get that's funny, but come on, Shanna. And then Shanna like gets killed and brought back to life. And so I was like, I was just annoyed at watching people rescue Shanna over and over again when Shanna clearly kicks some ass. But the humor in the book was very funny. I did enjoy the humor in the book. And the artwork is unbelievable because it's Frank Cho. But just the whole Wolverine saving the damsel over and over again. I think I'm just, maybe it's this week, for whatever reason, all of a sudden, I'm tired of watching damsels get saved. I don't know what happened that suddenly made me really annoyed by that, but it just seems so
maybe
overdone.
You've read enough books to realize that damsels can often save themselves and kick ass.
Yeah, and like reading
Girl
a lot of mainstream
power,
superhero
Joey.
Comics or mainstream
Girl
comics in general,
power.
It's like there's a reason why people get up in arms about the portrayal of women in superhero comics because it's shit.
Yeah.
It's done horribly.
You know what's done really well? The portrayal of all the female characters in X-Men by Brian Wood. Because it's all female characters, and they're all really awesome. And Storm, one of my favorite characters. She's so brilliant. And Jubilee, he made me love Jubilee. And normally I hate Jubilee because she's just...
We just talked about this.
I know, but
like
I want to talk about
it again. I like Jubilee.
Why don't you marry her?
That's very sexist of you, Rob. The only thing she's good for is breeding and marriage.
Well, she
can shoot fireworks.
Jubilee.
She's a vampire. Is she still a vampire? She was a vampire.
Is she a vampire?
She was a vampire for a while. When
they
Victor,
just pick every teen
when,
trope and just
no,
throw
when
it
Victor Gishler
back.
Was writing the book, it was actually really good. There was like a
Victor
year-long
Gishler's awesome.
Vampire storyline of Jubilee became a vampire. Anyway, okay, moving on from Wolverine, which was fine, but I'm not going to get the Joe Mad story, even though I like Joe
Is
Mad.
Is this your pick of the week?
No, I changed it to something else.
Right, to the thing.
But this was going to be... This is Godzilla number 12. This has been my pick a few times, though. Dwayne Swierczynski and Simon Gain. I'm not 100% sure, but I think Simon Gain has done every issue of this. I think. 12 issues now. So we're really getting down to the end here. Like, this whole series has been paced like a Godzilla movie, where
Sweet.
It's really plot-heavy in the front half, and then just fucking kick-ass action for the whole second half. We got Godzilla fighting Space Godzilla and Monster X. A cool splash page of Space Godzilla and everyone just getting rocked by an explosion.
I'm worried about you,
sweet.
Joey. I'm worried about you.
Shut up.
I'm worried about you. You're becoming desensitized by dinosaur fighting.
Our heroes inside Mechagodzilla are drowning underwater, but they managed to escape with the use of Mechagodzilla's laser. There's some cool fights with Rodan fighting Megalon.
Again with the fighting,
Joey. Oh, not Megalon.
Joey.
Yeah, it is
Again.
Megalon. No, it's Gigan. Excuse me. It's Megalon. It was Gigan. And And that was pretty great.
Maybe
and
they
then
should
also,
talk about their problems.
Anguirus saves Rodan, and then they're going to go and help Godzilla finish the fight. But the
fight,
coolest
again,
part of this issue for
again.
Me was when Monster X like evolves into his final form, Monster X 2.
What, to fight more?
Which is just like a really kick-ass version of King Ghidorah.
Yeah, kicking ass. So violent.
But yeah, there's very little dialogue in this book. It's
why, because they're too busy fighting?
All action. Would you shut the fuck up? Look, it was really, really good. It's
it
really
fantastic.
Fun. I really love Godzilla. If you like Godzilla movies, you'll
this
like
this artist is spectacular.
Yeah, I know. He's awesome.
Every single time you talk about this book, I go, I've read something with Simon Gain doing the art, and I love his art, but I can never remember what it was. Simon Gain, yeah.
So there's only one issue left in this before we launch a new Godzilla book with a different team, but this has been a really fun one.
Sweet.
I love Godzilla. I just love it.
Garzira.
Yarp.
Yarp. Okay, now it's that time. What time is it?
It's about 10:42.
It's a good joke, Joey. It's are you done with all your funny jokes?
Sure. It's time for our favorite.
My favorite.
Our favorites.
Our favorites.
Is there a snake in here? Well, silly boy,
okay,
why don't you start?
My favorite is a book.
This
from,
is my copy he's holding.
Yeah. From Vertigo Comics. Vertigo Comics. Joey briefly mentioned it earlier. We were talking about some of the new books coming out from Vertigo, and I forgot to mention how excited I am for Astro City next month by Kurt Busiek. But this is the big blockbuster from Vertigo. This will be one of their bigger titles, certainly a big title at our shop at Alpha Comics. Was literally flying off the shelves. Literally, it was The Wake by Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy, a reuniting. Wait.
I don't think they ever worked together, have they?
Yeah, they have.
Oh, they did that.
Survival of the Fittest.
Vampire.
It was really, really, really good. They did, the 6-issue miniseries, American Vampire, Survival of the Fittest. Sean Murphy, fresh off Punk Rock Jesus, and Scott Snyder, this is during his hiatus of American Vampire. It'll be coming back with like an anthology or something next week, next month. Maybe it's been July. I don't know. But then it's going to be coming back for good pretty soon. And this was his new horror book.
It's very nice to have him
really good.
Scott Snyder horror again.
Oh, it's very good. It starts off with with a really good prologue.
This
chapter called The Quest, where you're not really sure where it's
supposed
to take place.
But there's a hang
glider and a dolphin. It's a hang glider and a dolphin with a bunch of weird space tech. And she's
in... I thought a dolphin was going to tell someone to go fuck themselves like in the filth.
Go fuck it. Oh, yeah, that was awesome. The Dolphins of the Filth are my favorite comic book characters of all time. This full page of the monster just coming out of the water while the hang glider and the dolphin are scurrying away. Meanwhile, all the buildings are collapsing. I thought, at first I was like, that's a Joey page. Joey would love
I did
look
that page, yes.
That was a Joey page. Giant monster coming.
I'm a hungry monster.
And then it jumps back 200 years earlier, which looks more modern time. I assume it takes place now, and we get introduced to the main character of Dr. Archer. Archer! Lana! I noticed that throughout this book, Sean Murphy has a really cinematic approach to it. Like, there's so much Bendis storytelling in this book.
Lots of double pages,
double page stuff, which I loved and I thought was really
cool. Yeah, it was really well done.
There's a really good little flashback that you see into Dr. Archer's life. One panel kind of hinting towards her past and this
Archer's
frightening...
Good God, Lana.
And then it moves on where she goes to this base camp. More double page spreads. But the best part of it is at the very end... All of a sudden, when they're in this underwater base camp, there's a massive explosion, and all of a sudden, crazy violence. Oh my God, someone's very, very injured. There's bleeding, and then you get introduced to...
The Fluke Man from...
Pretty much, like
from
that X-Files episode.
X-Files.
Really cool, really cool picture of what will surely be an excellent Snyder villain monster, much like Skinner Sweet or the guy from Severed, who was creepy as hell.
That was a good book.
Yeah, that was a great book. This book, I think, will be just as good. It's quite frightening. I like the art a little bit more just because I'm a huge Sean Murphy fan, but
he
I'm not comparing
very
this.
Very good.
And then there's a little epilogue of this caveman who brutally wounds himself prostitute.
That was cool.
That was fucked up.
And he has this weird little pen thing that he looks
like. Yeah. There's a lot of mystery in this book. There's a lot of dread. Like I read a lot of this book with an actual feeling of dread while reeling it.
It's because you're a pussy.
I am. And when the submarine first goes down underwater towards the base camp, I was like, oh, people are going to die underwater. I'm terrified. And then
in that Doctor Who you haven't seen yet.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, this is just like that episode of Doctor Who that I bet will exist in the future.
And they're on a sub with an ice warrior.
Ice warrior. Anyway, it's really great to be reading some creator-owned Scott Snyder again, because as much as I really love everything that he does
at
DC, after reading American Vampire, after reading Severed, and now after reading this first issue, this is just miles above. Like, when he's unfettered and allowed to tell really scary stories, he's excellent. Such a good writer. Such a good storyteller. The plotting works really well. You can even read more about it if you want. If you go to alphacomics.ca, I wrote a review on The Wake, I wrote a review on X-Men, and I wrote a review on Adventures in Superman. What did I say?
Adventures in Superman.
No, see, they all took place in his bowels.
Adventures in Superman is one of those, like, XXX parody films that they put out. Just Luther balls deep in Superman.
Is that enough room for you, Mr. Luthor?
Do you need some more loot, Mr. Luthor? That's disgusting.
Do you need a fluffer, Mr. Luthor?
All fluffy, Mr. Luthor. No, you idiot. That's why we have Miss Tessmacher. Because what the fuck else does she do in that movie?
Nothing.
And I love that movie, but I'm like, why does he have this
okay,
woman
Mr.
with
Luthor?
A big boob window?
Well, I mean,
she was in Playboy back in the day.
Really?
Miss Tessmacher, yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. I'm going to go home and play Uncharted and forget about it.
All right, forget it's time you said for that. My pick of the week. My favorite. I'm going back to the internet, bitches. I'm going back to webcomics. I'm going to JL8, which is the best fucking thing ever. If you like Tiny Titans, you'll also love this. This is like our Justice League heroes reimagined as 8-year-olds at an elementary school.
It reminds me of the show Recess.
Yeah, you got Superman, you got Batman, you got Barry Allen, you got Hal, you got John Jones.
He's my favorite in the comic.
John Jones,
the depiction
Hal.
Of John Jones.
John Jones is
him wearing a suit, just being not understanding anything.
No,
basically, a foreign exchange student. He's
the best part
amazing.
Is when he punches Hippolyta.
I'm on
issue
75. They just talked to Neil Gaiman and left
the
bookstore.
Oh, mate, that's just like, oh, I know. I had my heart, all the feels.
I have all of the feels.
They're in the middle of a storyline wherein it has become revealed that Power Girl
has a crush on
Superman, but Clark has a crush on Diana.
Oh, no.
And Batman's been trying to help him, but then Batman figures out that it's actually that Diana's just trying to set Clark up with Karen. And he ends up like jumping into the path of the lasso, because they're going to use the lasso to make Superman tell the truth about who he has a crush on. And Batman ends up revealing that he has a crush on Power Girl. And there's this two great lines from the most recent installment where Superman's like, I just don't get it. I mean, like, you and her doesn't really make a ton of sense. And he goes, it makes plenty of sense. She's blonde and I'm rich. And Superman goes, what does that even mean? So then later, Batman approaches where Diana and Karen are talking, and Karen's trying to let him down. He goes, Bruce, I'm sorry. You're a pretty good friend. I kind of guess you're not really that close, but I really think that Batman says, I own horses we can ride. And she goes, we owe it to ourselves to explore these newfound feelings. But this comic does everything fun and right about DC Comics that DC Comics has totally forgotten about and abandoned. Their storyline where they create edgy new superhero costumes that are just the new 52 costumes to show that they're big kids is just wonderful.
Yeah.
It's just such a great story.
That's issue 50. That's kind of the... It was like a 5-page one instead of just the...
They're up to 128 now.
Joey tweeted these at me this morning, and I read up to issue 75 within an hour. I just burned through them. They're so good. They're so much fun. Beautiful artwork. And actually,
I forgot to mention, Yale Stewart is the artist.
Right. You have all the feels when you read it. Seriously.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. You know what almost made me bawl my eyes out? But luckily, I had the next installment to make it so that I wasn't a big pansy. When Superman and Batman are walking home together, and Clark goes home to the Kents, and he's like, see you, Batman. And the Kents are so wonderful and happy to have him there. And they're like, oh, we're so happy to have you home. He's like, yeah, I can't wait to tell you about my day. And then the last panel is Batman with his head hung, walking alone home. And you're just like,
But
my heart is breaking. Exactly.
Bruce is home in the cave watching the Grey Ghost, which is a great callback to the animated series.
Yeah.
And Alfred comes to sit and watch it with him.
And you know this is my favorite episode. It's adorable.
This is a great story when Bruce decides he's going to help Clark because he knows all about how to get women to like
right.
you.
That's funny.
He's like, how? Just like, let's just say Alfred likes his stories. So he watches all his soap operas with Alfred.
I also love when they go to the bookstore and they talk to Neil Gaiman. And Neil Gaiman sells them a book. That was
and he also, he sells them Anya's Ghost, which is a real book, which I actually just picked up. But I would also mention that you can buy Yale Stewart's creator-owned comic for $1, the PDF, at gumroad.com. So it's a 32-page story called Gifted, Volume 1. JLA is so good that I want to give this person money. Because, he's the fucking best. So I'm going to buy this comic as well, and maybe I'll talk about it at another time.
It is an absolute blast. And reading Martian Manhunter as an adorable little kid is pretty funny.
There's an awesome bit where he punches Hippolyta because to show affection, and she, yells at him, and he's like, I'm sorry, did I do something wrong? I've been told that that's how people on Earth show affection. She's like, who the hell told you that? And it cuts to Barry and Hal, who are just, totally smashing each other in the face at this birthday party table.
And then they both look
panicked and go, it was him!
The depiction of Barry and Hal is so perfect.
There's a whole bit with them fighting over what's better, cake or ice cream.
Yeah, I loved that. That was so funny. How can you not like cake? How can you not like ice cream? They're yelling over top of Martian Manhunter while he goes, oh dear. It's perfect. It's so funny. I love how it doesn't matter what version of Flash or Green Lantern it is. They are always bickering. Even in current New 52, Barry Allen and Hal Jordan don't get along. They always bicker. Grant Morrison's Kyle Rayner and Wally West
don't get along.
It's
always best friends not getting along. Not like
no. I thought Geoff Johns.
I'm edgy.
I have not read
past the first 5 issues of Geoff Johns.
Green Lantern
was his Green Lantern, which was weird because his Green Lantern book was good, but his Hal and Justice League.
Again, we had that conversation.
I was just saying,
so
Geoff Johns doesn't read other DC books, including the other ones he writes.
That was right. That was a problem that I had after issue 6, and we talked about it about
how
Jordan is
someone
that he's been writing for almost a fucking decade, and he's so good at writing Hal, but all of a sudden in Justice League he's a fucking asshole. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's my pick, JL8 by Yale Stewart. So definitely check it out. There's a lot of fantastic comics on the intertubes, and now we're going to turn off the mics and I'm going to show Rob some others. So until next week, we don't really have a good sign off, but I'm Joey G.
I'm Robbie G.
You're holding this too long. Just let it die. Oh, fade out. I love you. Goodbye.